On today's episode, my guests Katie and Brittany of the Grindhouse Girls podcast are not strangers to the controversial and the bizarre as we confront the underbelly of the film industry's questionable ethics on machine learning and artificial intelligence. The heartbeat of our discussion is the chilling Late Night with the Devil, a film invoking the grit of vintage horror. We dissect and analyze its resonance with the horror subculture. Our conversation also takes a grave turn, touching on the personal impacts of supporting problematic filmmakers and the moral complexities surrounding our consumption of media. So brace yourselves for a deep dive into the art of fear, the specter of technology in the creative realm, and the shadow that looms over Hollywood's glittering facade. The stage is set, and it's time to give the devil his due on this episode of The Syndicate.
Welcome to The Syndicate, a film and TV podcast. Be a part of the conversation as industry insiders, genre lovers, and cinephiles dare to peek beyond the curtains of imagination and dive into the art of cinema. Join us as we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. Now here's your host, Armand Haddad.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a returning guests two. The Grindhouse Girls have returned to The Syndicate. You didn't get scared away. You're back. And we're talking about a brand new horror film, a Grindhouse inspired horror film, if I do say so myself. Katie, Brittany, welcome back to the show. How do you feel?
Thank you.
Spooky.
Yeah, spooky. Feeling good. I am a little sad though. So as of today, we are recording on the 17th. And so this movie hits Shudder on the 19th.
Yes.
I have not seen it since we saw in theaters like 2 weeks ago. So like, I'm just like, please God, let me remember the most.
I did a lot
parts.
Of watching trailers to remind myself. And luckily someone has filled out an entire Wikipedia plot summary. So I could be like, oh yeah.
Plot summaries help.
Yes, but it was grand to see it in theaters, and it's grand to be back here.
Absolutely.
So, exciting. I wore my Coven, my Easy Bake Coven shirt that I was very excited to buy for Halloween, and then didn't wear it in October, so perfect for this.
Love it.
On a podcast where no one can see it, but I see it.
Well, we could see it, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, this movie, you know, I've heard buzz about this movie for like months and months and months.
Yeah.
Before it even came out in theaters, because like it was like a special after midnight film at the Chicago International Film Festival. And for some reason I didn't watch it. But I heard so much buzz about it, so much whispers like, oh, this movie is gonna be incredible. It's amazing. It's like the Blair Witch meets a late night TV show, and it's just like, oh my God. So incredible. Mm-hmm. I do very little. And then Brittany was actually the one that pushed me over the edge because I reached out to you two. I was like, hey, are you interested in coming back onto the show to talk about whatever you want to talk about? And Brittany was like, actually, we were going to reach out to you. Actually, we were going to reach out to you about Late Night with the Devil.
Yep.
Yeah. This was a pretty big one as far as like an indie horror film, because even like, I have a coworker who like lives on Reddit, and he was just like, have you heard about Late Night with the Devil? And like, I was like, and this was like maybe 2.5 months ago. And I was like, no, he's like, oh my God, I think you're going to love this movie. So he actually, when me and Katie saw it with our friends, he was behind us. Like he went to
they co-opted our movie. We had like planned on having a small group of people go. And I brought my boyfriend, who's an introvert, and my best friend who had just moved back. One of my best friends, she had just moved back into town. Also an introvert, and she'd never gotten to meet Brittany before. And I was like, oh, this will be perfect. We all like horror movies. And then Brittany's like, so all of my coworkers are seeing the movie at the same time we are. And then I show up, and all of these people I know from Birmingham area theater and comic circles, like stand-up comedians and stuff, they all just happened to be there for a friend's birthday. So it was like we knew everyone in the theater. So it was a very uproarious way to watch it, which was actually very fun.
It actually is. I think this movie is one of those movies. It's meant to be seen in like a full theater because you kind of can experience the dread with everyone else. I really like that aspect, kind of like a talk show, right?
Yeah,
like with the audience.
Yeah, I guess I was a little like, I was like, some of it I kind of wish I was seeing it from my living room. So I feel like it'll be interesting to watch it when it does come on Shudder, like as you're like the audience at home. But it does kind of feel like you're in the audience watching the whole live talk show be recorded and experiencing it for yourself. But you get some backstage sneak previews too.
Yeah. Now tell us about your viewing experience.
Okay. So when you guys went to the theater, it was, mm-hmm. it was packed. It was a packed show.
Yes. Yes. But it was a yes. small theater. We went to Sidewalk Cinema, which is the art house theater in Birmingham. It's an very independent nice. Theater.
And it hosts, 60 seats, 60, I think.
Yeah. And it hosts our only, like, the big Alabama Film Festival, which is the Sidewalk Film Festival.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes. Okay. Similar experience for me as well. I went to the art house theater in Chicago called Music Box. Oh, over yeah. 100 years old, mm-hmm. and they were playing Late Night with the Devil in the smaller theater, same amount of seats, probably like 60 people in there, mm-hmm. and it was packed. Like, I got there early, I was like, all right, probably going to mm-hmm. be like 5 people in here. It was a packed showing, and it's one of those theaters where you have to fight for your seat, so
well, oh.
yeah, I'm glad I got there early. And everyone was there with their friends. They're like, oh man, so like word of mouth on this movie definitely paid off, because I think everyone was just hungry for this movie, because like mm-hmm. it definitely got a buzz on all of the news channels when it yeah. comes to like film or cinephile media. And like this film, I knew very little going into it. I just knew what I just said earlier, like it's kind of like a found footage type movie, mm-hmm. Late night TV show featuring the guy from The Dark Knight. And
the Polka Dot Man. And,
I was about to say Polka Dot Man.
And
yeah.
Twin Peaks The Return.
There you go. There
he
you
is
go.
A face that has been around for a long time, but not in the spotlight, I would say. David Dastmalchian.
Yes. What a name. David yeah. Dastmalchian. Double yeah. D.
I've listened to him enough times to be like, I think I can confidently say your last name, but I'm probably still saying it a little wrong, and I feel a little bad about that, but it's okay.
Yeah. We also have to point out he was in Dune and Oppenheimer.
Yes,
so
he was.
He's just like kind of, he's always there. As soon as you see yeah. the face, you recognize the face. Well, like.
And he's been on Last Podcast. He apparently, his wife got him turned onto that podcast because he's like a spooky dude, and his wife is like spooky stuff too. And he was on there during the strike, so he couldn't talk about any of his upcoming movies. But then they did an interview with him after the strike just a month ago, right before Late Night with the Devil was coming on. And I had seen the trailer, but that's all I'd seen because I was like, oh, it's going to be on Shudder. Oh, I'm so excited. And because Shudder is one of the distributors. And I went to go find it that weekend and realized, oh, nope, theatrical first. But yes.
So I have to ask. Okay, mm-hmm. so we all saw this in a packed theater. It was like a, mm-hmm. you know, like a tight-knit group of people watching this. So you mentioned that Shudder is one of the financiers, producers, distributors of mm-hmm. this film. And before we even talk about this film, I do want to talk about kind of the title cards yes. in this film.
Oh,
now,
the AI debacle?
Yeah.
No, yeah. not that. We'll get
oh,
into that.
Oh, the illustration cards for the production company?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So like I'm sitting nine there, of them. I'm watching it. So many. And like, I shit you not. I mean, you guys saw the movie too. Like, there was like 10 production yeah. companies. It was to the point where the audience started laughing because we're yeah. like, okay, the yeah. movie's going to start now.
I giggled.
And it's another okay. like title card. Yeah. It's like, no
I
way.
I think two of them, I know Spooky Pictures is owned, I think, by one of David Dastmalchian's friends. So like, I feel like this is something where like, people just kept like being like, we need a little bit more money. Can you also contribute? Can you contribute? But they couldn't get anybody like big, you know? So they just had a bunch of little people stepping in. Britt?
I was about to say, so Katie knows it's like my guilty pleasure because I've been watching it for like 20 years. All I could think of was the Family Guy skit.
Oh.
yeah.
Literally in the theater and it just keeps going. He's like, ah, this is a movie. Ah. Like, you know. And I'm just like, and even in that skit, there's only like 6 title cards. So like the yeah. skit that's making fun of title so cards had less than this. That's
but,
insane.
But the
funny.
Only two that are like largely credited, like when you read articles about it, is IFC Films and mm-hmm. Shudder, which I guess yeah. are the two biggest. But they're still very like indie. Like Shudder will pick up like independent horror films. And like they're the only ones who ever distributed Possession in the United States for streaming. Like that's how we got to do Possession last year, was because it's like so taboo that no one ever went to stream it until then.
Didn't they distribute Terrifier as well?
I think so.
It seems like it's up their alley.
Art the Clown's from Huntsville, Alabama, where I went to school as there a kid. One of my theater friends was a high school friend of his.
Get him on the podcast. That's
why I don't know him personally. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he would. She is also one of my sorority sisters. She was like, oh, yeah, you went to high school with that guy. You should watch that movie. And I was
get him on the podcast. GrindhouseGirls.com. So, so let's, okay, well, I'm glad I wasn't alone because, like, I was watching the 10 title cards. I'm like, this has to be a joke. I guess it wasn't a joke.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
They needed money.
I mean, that's what independent film is now. It's like you get like $10,000 over here, maybe $30,000, maybe a cool million from a couple people. But it is like, it's like the writer of American Fiction? Am I remembering the name of that movie?
American Fiction.
Writing was talking about, like, please start funding, you know, 20 indie films instead of one giant film because, like, we need more storytellers. That's, and so, like, right. But because it's the Wild West out there, they got it's Fallout, the TV show, if you have seen it yet.
That's right. And it's less of a gamble, too, like the great Mike Stoklasa says. Yeah. Instead of putting all your money into one big bet, $100 million movie, do $10 million movies, and you'll get all of your money back. And
that is almost a direct quote. I have seen that episode. I could not tell you what episode it is. Yes. In Mike Stoklasa, we trust.
Yes.
That's not really. You shouldn't trust him. He's a sarcastic person, but he is funny as hell.
He is the hack fraud that's in our hearts.
Hack fraud. My brain went blank. He's a hack fraud, but we love him.
Okay, so I think we teased this movie long enough. Let's get into Late Night with the Devil. So let's talk about David Dalmatian and his character Jack. So
we'll have a Dalmatian plantation.
Brittany,
oh my god, poor memory.
Yeah.
Did one of you want to summarize the whole plot of Late Night with the Devil? Did you want me to do it? How did you want to do this?
We're going to let you take this away, sir.
I did write a blurb, but it's very short.
Okay. I want to know about your blurb.
Okay. In an effort to avoid cancellation, the recently widowed but always charming late night host Jack Delroy decides to put everything he has into the 1977 Halloween special of Night Owls, including an interview with the devil.
Oh my god. I am sold on this film. Yeah.
That's... their trailer voiceover guy had it perfect. It hooked you.
And let's get into it. So, like, this movie starts off with, like, kind of like an ID TV channel.
True crime. Almost.
Yeah. We're looking back on this infamous night, the late night with the devil. Mm-hmm. On Jack Delroy's late night show, The Night Owls. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of onboarded to this whole world that we're going to find ourselves in for the next 90 minutes, mm-hmm. Where it's Jack Delroy, his TV ratings are fledgling in comparison to, like, you know, the juggernauts, Carson.
Yeah, there's a whole thing where he and Johnny Carson are rivals.
Yeah.
And he has this beautiful wife who's like a theater actress and supports him. And she died of cancer unexpectedly the year before. And they that's kind of, they plummeted and then they came right back up. And now it's Sweeps Weeks.
Yes.
And apparently they put it in 1977 because Halloween was on a Monday. And that's when Sweeps Week would, that's when you would get your ratings.
Oh my God.
I just found that out today. I think it was on either Wikipedia or IMDb. So I was
did some research.
Yeah.
So yeah, like with what's interesting about this film, and like I said, I went into it blind, and I was surprised on how much, like, I don't know who wrote this, but whoever wrote this really did their homework, because everything that they talked about is real. Because like I'm sitting there and it's like, oh, you know, his ratings are like low, like really low, like the station's gonna like cancel his show. So what does he do? He goes to this exclusive club in Northern California, the Grove, the Bohemian Grove. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh my God, is that the Bohemian Grove? Then they show like the owl god and the Moloch in the background. Yes, and I'm like,
which,
holy shit, they're doing it.
Yeah, I guess if you're not into conspiracy theories, you might not know what Bohemian Grove is. I fortunately slash unfortunately dated a conspiracy theorist for a while. And so they got really into Bohemian Grove. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Also, just so you know, the only documentary I could find on Bohemian Grove, because I was going to watch one, is by Alex Jones, who has obviously just lost a bunch of lawsuits because he lied about Sandy Hook, very tragically. That documentary is great on HBO because you get to watch him just get eviscerated in court, and it's great.
So for those listening,
we're gonna
handle that documentary on this podcast, but you have to stay tuned for that.
Oh, it's fantastic! I loved it. I love seeing that man have a downfall because he's an athlete. But anyways, I knew about it because of that, and I was like, oh, I know what this is. But then, like, they also have like Anton LaVey kind of stuff, like a Satanist cult too, which Satanic Panic was really big in the late 70s. So I think, Brittany, I think it's the Cairns brothers? Is that how you say their
last name? Yeah, so it's Cairns brothers. So they wrote and directed together. They're Australian brothers, but they're also director and writers. And I think, like, so they wrote this together, directed this movie together, too.
And everyone's, like, Australian in this movie, except for Jack, who is played by an American. Which I found interesting because everyone had a pretty good American accent.
I was fooled. I had no idea they were all Aussies.
I think the only person who's, I think
even Lily
Carmichael isn't. I don't think Ian Bliss.
Okay.
I think he is American, and Michael Ironside is the narrator. Who, if you don't know who Michael Ironside, he was in Starship Troopers, Total Recall, and Scanners. Yep. I think he's the guy that the evil Scanners guy, the evil brother in Scanners. I want to say.
Well, but,
yeah.
One of the main inspirations, too, for Jack Delroy was actually Don Lane, who was an Australian late-night talk show host, but he was American. He was an American in Australia, but he, like, brought, like, psychics and stuff on, and he was, like, the first talk show host that, like, actually entertained the idea of, okay, like, maybe this could be real. Like, he didn't make them into, like, a cheap trick. And so, like, the brothers grew up watching him. And then David wrote this article for Fangoria, and David was talking about...
You stole my trivia, Brit.
Yeah. Well, I actually read, like, four different interviews, including, like, a big one with The Hollywood Reporter and Variety about it. So that's where I actually got my little bits from. But yeah,
David was talking about it on the last podcast, how he just... So apparently he grew up in a very religious household that did not celebrate Halloween. And the one thing his parents would let him do... is watch the late night horror hosts like Svengoolie or Elvira kind of things. My dad loves Svengoolie.
I'm surprised you know about Svengoolie. I thought he was just a local crazy guy.
MeTV broadcasts it in Alabama at like a local station because there's no Alabama person that does it on television. Although I do know some drag queens that do their own like watch along horror stuff. I found out recently who like spooky stuff.
Sick.
So he, like, that was, like, the one thing he got to do. So that's why he wrote that article, for Fangoria because like he just grew up like loving it, and he apparently has like a very spooky house and sometimes hosts like they tried to do a seance in his house and like a candelabra fell on someone's shoulder.
Svengoolie's house? Everyone...
No. At David Deschmalchin's. I don't know. I know the big thing about Svengoolie. I've watched it before. And they're like, no personal checks. They still say that. But I'm like, also, like, well, no one writes personal checks anymore. But, ha ha ha, it was funny in the 80s. but, I don't know, 90s? I don't know how old Svengoolie is because he wears so much makeup.
He's been around since Elvira days. Oh, so.
Yeah, which I'm a huge Elvira fan. Like one day I will be Elvira for Halloween. Mark my words. I just got to get the wig. I was trying to figure out how to make the wig big enough. And one of my friends who's a drag queen was like, I will help you out. Two wigs. That's apparently the secret. But yeah, so like newspaper. He loves them.
Stuff
it
in.
Well, yeah, it's a little heavy. Like you have to like make sure it's not too heavy, I guess, to be able to walk around. I don't know. But but yeah, so it is like a really cool thing that they just happened to read his. I didn't know about the Australian guy, but I did know that they used to bring psychics a lot and stuff like that. And there was a whole thing where the guy that, you know, the debunker guy in this movie, there's like
yeah.
That is Carmichael. A famous thing with the guy he's based off of.
Yes.
Is,
oh my God. Yeah. Because I was
hold
watching
on, I wrote it,
it
down.
And I was like, oh, these
James
are
Randi.
All. Yeah. Because he, I think his amount, you could correct me if I'm wrong, was like $100,000 or something like that, or a
like
million.
That.
Yeah. If you yeah. can actually do, because his whole thing was like, if you can actually do, you know, psychic powers, if you can actually do things, yeah, or magic, I will give you, you know, like $100,000 or $1 million.
To check around.
Yeah. And to this times. Day, no one has able to do it because like all these charlatans are like, oh, I can move the book pages with my mind.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can't do it. The studio lights are messing with me. I can't do it. This is not a conductive place to do this right now. It's like, yeah,
it's
you're
the
you're
vibe is off.
The
vibe
is off.
I don't know. Someone in here is not open to the channel. Although if you watch Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which one of my friends got me into, there's one of them, she keeps bringing on psychics to like align their chakras. I am not besmirching anyone who likes it makes them feel better. Listen, if it makes you feel better, it's not hurting anyone, that's fine. But it is a little charlatan when you're like bringing up people's dead relatives in front of them and being like, they're talking to you.
Yes.
It's like the New Jersey, is it the, oh, Long Island medium.
Teresa Caputo.
Yeah. Well, she, you know, my mom was like, I think she means well, even if she's lying. She seems to want to help people. I was like, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like she just wants attention. Just gonna say it.
Let's unpack that a little bit. Because Jack Delroy, for his Halloween special, that's the whole framing device for this entire movie. He's having a Halloween special, big blowout thing. So he has all these little guests. And his first guest is a psychic medium, Christo. And
which
like,
it's spelled Christ, ooh, by the way.
That's probably intentional.
I think so.
So, like, he is, like, full on, like, Johnny Carson's character with, like, the big turban, salt and hat.
What do they call it? Like, the Great Gazoo, or it was, like, the Flintstones. Remember the Flintstones character that was actually an alien, but he also had a big head? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I always conflated the two.
You're taking me back.
For some reason. I watched a lot of Cartoon Network growing up.
Back when Cartoon Network was the bomb, showing Hanna-Barbera and all those.
Girls, and then that's how I watched anime.
Toonami.
Yeah, that's the only. My brother and I both had insomnia as high schoolers, and so I would come down and be like, "What is this?" And he'd be like, "Inuyasha," and I'd be like,
"No."
All right.
So no, Toonami Tom was like Tenchi Muyo.
Oh no, you're right.
Outlaw Star, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball Z. So yeah.
By the time I got home, only Dragon Ball Z was on, and we had to watch Dragon Ball Z. What was the one at night though? It was like
Adult Swim, and it had like Cowboy Bebop and Yuyasha.
But there was a few hours that it turned specifically to anime in the middle of the night, and I can't remember what it was called. But it was like, I don't know, but it was part of
Adult Swim.
Yeah,
but yeah. Space Ghost, Coast to Coast.
Yeah, Space Ghost. Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
I loved all those. Oh my, those were the days.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force is still off and on going on too. Like sometimes they'll just do random seasons and shit.
So going back to Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah,
speaking
sorry.
Of Coast to Coast. So so we had this psychic medium on, Christu, and he's, you know, decked out in the whole like garb of like he's from like the Far East and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, going. And he's like,
he fakes an accent.
Yeah. Everything about him is fake. He's a charlatan. He's a snake oil salesman, and he goes on there and he's cold reading. He's like, there's a P word. Peterman. And then someone like stands up like, my wife's maiden name is Peterson. Yeah. Her name is Mary. It's actually, like Blair or something.
Yeah, it's not going well for him.
Yeah, not going well at all.
Which, when you think about it, is actually like pretty smart because, you know, for a long time, Mary was the most popular girl's name. So chances are you're going to have like a Mary somewhere in the audience. Like, it's like if you had a group of millennials, it's like, I sense a Brittany or an Ashley. Like, you know. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. You're just shooting in the dark. And yeah. And like going back to like the psychic mediums that we would see on TV, I think they're the master of body language. Because I think they like put something out there like, oh, I'm sensing a P word. Then they're looking in the crowd, seeing if people like move.
Observation is very important.
Super observant. And I think they're a master in that regard. But like with this Christou character, I don't think he's actually a magician. I don't think he's in touch with that realm of spirituality, of another dimension or whatever. Mm-mm. I think he just messes around. I think he just fucks around. And he ends up finding out, since he's fucking around, that he actually encounters something from beyond. And it's actually the demon.
Yeah, he starts having it almost feels like a mass seizure or a stroke or something. He's like holding his head and his eyes get all bloodshot and the electricity starts going. And you're like, and he mentions a nickname.
Minnie.
And that's the nickname that only Jack ever called Minnie in private, his deceased wife.
That's right.
Which Jack's the only one who's kind of like, oh, that was weird. So it's like he finally is a real psychic, but at what cost? Because he is not doing well through the rest of that night.
No, he is like sweating. Like, I think he throws up black goo.
Yeah. And they're like, no, stay. And then he throws up and then they take him and... They do this really cool thing where I think I mentioned this when we were talking about on our anniversary episode, when we were going to do this movie on this podcast. I was like, I really enjoyed the black and white being what's happening backstage to kind of like tell you, like, this is not what the audience is seeing. This is only what is being seen backstage. Unlike Maestro, that I saw and absolutely did not understand why they were using black and white. And they were changing everything. It was like, it made no sense. And it was just like, I just want it to be different or something. It was just like fake artistic. I'm sorry. I hated that movie. But I liked it in this one.
I actually did not like the black and white.
You did?
No, I did not. And
Hold up. Okay. Here's my justification for the black and white. Because like I'm sitting here, I'm watching it and I'm like, okay. Like, there is some sort of limitation with this found footage format of, like, you know, it's a late night. This is a real late night show. It's like, that's going to severely limit your storytelling and what you can say. But then they go backstage with the black and white. And I think that's fitting for the time. If this takes place in the 1970s, guess what type of film stock was cheaper? Black and white, not color. So it makes sense that a handheld video camera backstage was in black and white.
Yeah. Or it's just, you know, this is happening maybe out. I don't know. I like that version better.
When we get more towards the critical aspect of it at the end of this film when we're ready to talk about the meat of the movie, to me it kind of takes you out of the tension of what's happening in real time.
Let's get into the meat of the movie. Yeah. Let's get into it.
Okay.
Why does it take you out?
So, for me, it's just like, so things will be intense, and I get, like, you know, I get that they're cutting commercial break, and he'll be like, you know, we'll be right back, but it kind of takes that tension away from you, so you're not really living in the moment of it, and what I would have liked to seen is either full-blown, like, basically, like, treat it like this was a documentary, right, and we're talking about this documentary, like, this episode that aired, and let's think about it as... So we're in there the whole time. And when they say they're going to commercial breaks, rather than let it cut to black and white, maybe let them fill in the dialogue. What the hell is happening? That kind of thing. Or what they also could have done, in just my opinion, they could have made it as a documentary setting and cut to like reenactments or like interviews with members of the audience that was there. Those are the,
Okay.
I think it could have been done
better. See, but I think that would have interrupted the flow of, like, this is... They were trying to keep it exactly at 90 minutes because it was as long as the thing was going, the actual real life, quote unquote, real life episode was. So they were trying to give you the flow of, like, what his life was like at that moment in time. So he's, like, on stage, then he's backstage, then he's on stage. Mm-hmm. So they didn't want to cut at all, basically. I think is probably what their intention was.
They kind of did it already, though, with the satanic cult and where Lily came from. They kind of did that a little bit. They did a little sneak away. But the other thing that bothers me...
But that was part of the show. Yeah,
it was, but that's what I'm saying. They could have done, like, more segments as, like, part of the show. Like, so you had been kept in the world of the show versus, like, the backstage of the show. And also, if we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, I didn't like the opening because, for me, it kind of ruined. We already knew where the movie was heading to because we knew he was a member of the cult, right? Did anyone else feel that way?
Well, you don't. We don't. Okay. Here's
I
the
like
thing.
Foreshadowing, so I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it did foreshadow. It was a setup for the payoff for the ending of the film. But we as the audience, you can make that connection that, okay, he made a deal with the devil. Mm-hmm. But we don't really know. And maybe that's not the point. Maybe the point is more of Jack Delroy and his just, what do you call it, erosion of his character and what he's willing to sacrifice for fame. That's his whole, like, MO for this entire film. Is like, I want to be famous. I want to be known. I want my show. And he, like, masks it with, like, I'm like, essentially the patriarch of, like, this entire production. Like, it's my responsibility. Yeah. I have to take care of all these people. Each person has, like, a paycheck, has a job, a livelihood. We can't let this production end. I need these ratings to go up. But that's not really the core of it. The core of it is selfish reasons. He wants to be famous. He wants to be number one.
You see that with Gus? Gus illustrates the opposite because Gus has a very high moral character and he has a harder stop. Where he's like, I don't really feel comfortable with this. I feel like we're kind of, like, we're compromising our integrity. And also, he's religious, so he's like, I don't want to mess with the devil. And he doesn't tell any of his people what's going on. They keep, like, he and his producer keep, like, saying, oh, like, keep changing things on the whole crew. And they don't tell everyone up front what's happening. They, like, mask it. And it's like... It seems like he's always been up front before, and this is, like, a big shift in his character. And it's because he just wants to be... He wants to be famous, and he lost his wife. And I think he's kind of just, you know, lost in the sauce. And but this is his one thing he's going towards.
He even used his wife's cancer diagnosis and, like, cancer... as a tool to get more ratings because he put her front and center on the Night Owl TV show. It's like, look at my wife. She's sick.
Oh, that happened. I had to go to the bathroom at the very beginning. Oh. And I saw him getting married and his beautiful wife. And then I ran to the bathroom and I came back. I was like, did I miss anything?
That's when you bring a jar and
someone
said,
well, they do make the little squatty things for women now. Yeah. But I was like, what happened? And Scott was like, oh, you didn't miss anything.
Oh, you missed something.
And I was like, what happened to his wife? And then
I looked up, keep watching.
Eventually I was like, oh, she died. Okay. But I didn't see her get carted
on stage.
And
if we're, like,
going
to go into full blown kind of spoiler alert, for this movie at this... Cool, because I'm...
We're already there.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about the ending, because the ending gives me hot... I whispered this to Brittany in the middle of the theater. I was like, is this going to be Silent Hill 2 ending? Or...
I'm very...
If you know, you know.
I'm very, like, kind of... I think where I flourish is looking at writing, and I'm very analytical of writing. So my thing is... So we see backstage where Jack and Dr. June Ross Mitchell, like, they kind of have, like, this little thing. And you're like, okay, something's going on between them. They probably already slept together. But when Lily reveals it while under possession, I'm like, that would have been such a stronger moment if we hadn't seen that already.
That it's just, like, little nitpicky things like that. And I want to specify, it doesn't mean I didn't like the movie. I just thought there was different choices they probably could have made. It could have been more impactful for me personally.
So what I'm hearing is you would rather have, like, not had any backstage information at all and just seen the actual show.
I think so. I think so, because I feel like with the backstage information, it's kind of like, I don't think this was the director's intention, but sometimes to me it feels like you're assuming your audience isn't clever enough to always catch what's going on unless you put it more in their face.
Yes.
But then we wouldn't have known that Christo died.
Yeah, that's the one thing I actually was thinking about. That's the only thing. I don't really know how they could have dropped that while on air, without sitting. But then again, so why is the audience, there's all this crazy shit happening. No one in the audience gets up and leaves. They talk about, until the very end. Yeah, and they talk about that there's members, in the black and white, they talk about members of the crew are leaving because they're getting spooked, but I don't think we see the members of the crew leaving.
No, at any but point. I also
they
think
just talk about it.
The audience maybe still thinks it's an act. You know, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't necessarily assume that there was an actual demon possession in front of me. I would be like, well, that was a cool trick. You know, you know, I was like, there's probably wires, you know, it's, I mean, because I like, I am a logical skeptic, but I'm also like, I've had some ghost, we've talked about this on the podcast. I've had some ghosty experiences that to me seemed very real, and I'm, you know, of sound mind, and, you know, but it doesn't mean that it is what I want to believe it is necessarily. And I don't trust other people. Like if I hear creaky noises when I'm on a haunted tour, I'm going to assume someone has set that up, but I'm going to enjoy the experience. But if it is real, that's cool too. But I'm like, I'm a healthy skeptic and I love watching ghosty things, but I wouldn't be in that audience going, wow, that is Satan incarnate. We better get out right now.
Literally, Lily is fucking floating and electricity is coming out every orifice and the cameraman doesn't move. Point,
the audience is like, all right, time to get out.
You know, I will say the one thing they missed out on by not doing what Britt's saying of like having the full broadcast, like you're just watching on television, is they could have had a lot of funny 70s commercials. Like, we could have had a Cheddar Goblin moment from Mandy, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been fun, too.
Because I love that Cheddar Goblin commercial. I mean,
there was two avenues to take with this film. You can either do it straight, where it's like, cuts a commercial, and then it's like, Dove soap. Like, we could have went that direction.
Oh, no, Calgon, take me away. Those were terrible commercials.
Also, it would have been, like, great fun to poke at a lot of things that was going on in the 70s, but one of the things is, like, I don't know if you guys have seen, like, old trailers that are, like, heavily misogynist and stuff. Like,
oh, the Folgers commercials?
Yeah, they could have, like, poke fun at that, too, even. Like, you know, like...
Bob never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Are you sick of your wife burning your toast?
Yes. Those are... I have them on a playlist because I did not think they were real.
No, they're real.
They are so real.
Like, you could have went that direction, but I think it would have made it... Okay, there is a sheen of, like, satire with this film, and there's a sheen of, like, comedy, which, like...
It is funny.
...disarms the horrific elements to it, because it's like, oh, I'm having a good time. Like, this is funny, this is fun. I think it would have leaned too into the comedy if you were to go that direction with, like, having those, like, fake commercials or even real commercials.
Because it does take a hard left into horror. And that is where a couple people in our group, like my boyfriend Scott was like, it kind of lost me when her head split open. And I was like, I get that. I kind of enjoyed it. But like, I think he was like, I was kind of vibing with the more realistic angle of maybe it was just a hypnosis. And I was kind of like, oh, why is all of this happening?
Okay.
But so he loved it up until that point.
He was taken like, out when... There was actual supernatural stuff going
on. I guess he was kind of the... To be fair, we went to Savannah when we first started dating.
Georgia?
After I figured out he wasn't a... Yeah, Savannah, Georgia, because it's like America's most haunted city. He knew I had a spooky podcast and was like, once you figure out I'm not a serial killer, would you like to go to Savannah? Because I've always wanted to go and I've never had a ghost experience. Would you like to go? And me being someone who I was like, oh, yeah, that'll be fun. So we went on spooky ghost tours. And he did hear something in the most haunted house. He heard like a cannon going off. And no one else heard it. I didn't hear it. He was like, oh, my God, what was that noise? And nobody heard it in that basement. And I have been telling him, I was like, it's your ghost experience. He's like, I don't know. I don't really. It must have just been something weird. Like he had a little ghost moment. And he still won't fully believe it. Personally, like I said, I'm a healthy skeptic. I am. It's probably why I like Mike on Rather to Media, because he also likes the ghost vibes, but also doesn't believe the television ghost people. But I'm like, absolutely, that's where I am. But yeah, so I get that if you were more of like, if you wanted the ending to be more abstract, of like, maybe it was all in your head and it wasn't actually happening. But I kind of liked when it actually turned real, because then you got a ton of blood and guts and violence. And Brittany wants to say something, so I'm
going to stop now. We're going to let Armand talk first. And then okay. I'll say yes.
I mean, you had all the setups for the payoff of like an actual supernatural event happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you had all these moments like Christo like having an actual experience from beyond, you know, the dagger.
Which Brittany and I kept whispering to each other, are they just going to leave that dagger out? Put the dagger away.
We're like, Chekhov's gun.
Yeah. So, the theater majors in us was like, oh, no.
Yeah. And then you have Lily like actually being possessed or.
Yeah. And looking into the camera to possess everyone through the television.
Yeah. Like you had all those moments that lead up to the big finale of like, she then levitates. She's like busting her head open and. Fire coming out and
is Abraxas, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess it was Abraxas.
That is an actual demon too, by the way. I don't know if you know
it
that.
Is,
and that's what I think. Like you know, like Jack probably made his deal a long time ago, and I'm one of those people. I think that he probably when he made his deal in the Grove, he didn't really know what he was getting into. Like he didn't realize that it was going to cost his wife's life. I don't think he realized any of that.
I don't think he's a bad guy.
I just think he makes poor decisions, and we're watching the repercussions unfold in real time.
I think he's a person who has a singular goal, and he has blinders on to everything else around him. And it's great ratings, late night star, famous person. And I think we probably all had people in our lives who's like that. Where like their ambition is just a little too high that they don't really think about other people. And I mean, I don't know, maybe it's because I went to, Brittany too, we both went to like acting school and theater school where there were people who just like didn't care if they walked all over you, if they spread rumors about you or were mean to you or anything. They were just like, I'm going to get the lead in this thing. And can we curse on this?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Fuck you. If you like, it gets real catty. I'm not a catty person. Which is why, I still love performing and singing and everything and doing, like, the podcast. But I would never, be a bitch to everybody on purpose just to, have my way. It just seems like you would be so lonely at the top. And I think that is kind of what happens to Jack, is that he is so focused on this one goal that he ignores his co-host and his crew and everyone telling him this is a bad idea. And he just does the bad idea. And then he reaps what he sows. And it's, I feel bad for Lily, personally.
I don't feel bad for the demon, but I do think it's kind of sad that the demon, even when Lily wakes up and the demon's in her, it's like, what's going on? Like, it's surprised that it's there's people watching it. It's I thought that was a very interesting choice as well.
Well, she was bred to house a demon, feel like is very depressing. And also, does him stabbing her just close the chapter, or does him stabbing her at the end release the demon into the world?
Well, also I was wondering because the illusion, Lily tells Jack, she's like, oh yeah, Mr. Delroy, I think you're going to be really famous really soon. And it's like, he's famous because I guess he murdered a child on air, technically.
The electricity was going so off. So maybe no one saw him murder the child, but he certainly has fingerprints on that dagger.
It's the Mephistophelian bargain. He wanted to be famous. He wanted to be known. And he got his wish.
He did.
Just a little bit of an inverse to it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a monkey's paw.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
you'll get your... And the sad thing is, with his wife... So, at some point, after her head splits, it turns into kind of a dream sequence, which this was kind of weird because they didn't go black and white. But I guess because they were just trying to tell you, we don't know what reality is, and neither does Jack, basically. And
right, it becomes cinematic. It becomes like a normal movie at that point. I was like, oh, now we're even beyond the framework of like this whole 1970s thing. Exactly. Now it's like we're in a whole other dimension.
That's the part that reminded me of Silent Hill 2, the game, which they are making that plot the next Silent Hill movie, which I think is probably the best cinematic version of Silent Hill, because spoilers for Silent Hill 2, which is like, I don't know, is it 20 years old now? It's very
old.
At least. Very old. But basically, am I spoiling it for you, Armand? I'm
assuming my friend Aaron's a big Silent Hill fan, and we did a Silent Hill episode. So
yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Us too. Resident Evil, Silent Hill, hell yeah. So basically, like, the main character gets a letter from his dead wife, shows up at Silent Hill, and he goes, when he traverses the, you know, haunted town, he sees all of these manifestations of his guilt, because you find out, spoiler alert, he quote unquote mercy killed his dying wife, but also was cheating on her the whole time. So he was not a great husband. And he was very selfish, and Pyramid Head is a manifestation of his guilt, as are the creepy little sex mannequins that are just like legs on top of legs on top of, they call them mannequins, but they're just creepy leg. They're kind of like the Toy Story leg toy if it was perverted and creepy. But yeah, but it's like the best cinematic game, because it's like a very like interesting treatise on guilt. And then of course, like, Jack mercy kills his wife's spirit, who apparently her ghost shows up all throughout the movie, and I caught it a couple times, but not every time, so I'm excited to go back and watch it when it's on Shudder, because like, that was my favorite part of Haunting of Hill House, was finding all the hidden ghosts and watching it a second time and then a third time, and now I can point out to people when I watch it, like, hey, there's a ghost back there, do you see the ghost? Because it's just fun.
I love those little type of things too, like the ghost hide in the background, or Madeline hiding in the background, and this, because it's like you sense something, like even when you're taking in the whole screen of the movie, you sense something's off, but it's not until like you catch it again later that you're like, oh, that's why you're uncomfortable, but you can't put your finger on it because there's things going on that you're like, you know. So I think that's really, really cool. But yeah, they say, so I did see her in the mirror at one point, but then she was also in the watch on the table, which I did not see her at that point, but I did read about that. So,
and they catch her on camera at some point, but that was much more obvious because they go back and rewind it and stuff.
Yeah, well, shout out to the practical effects in this movie. I know we haven't really talked about that yet, but the practical effects were awesome. Well, so
I feel bad because the effects are really good in this movie, but a bunch of people were upset because, so it premiered in March of last year in 2023 at South by Southwest. And it, I guess it didn't have the little transitions where it was like spooky Halloween episode of Night Owl. And then in between that, and I think when it went on the like full festival circuit, they added these AI generated like little animation artwork things.
Yes.
And everyone's upset about that.
Here's the thing. Let's because I want to talk about that. So let's start
it's
the off
become
the
an
fence.
Apology tour, apparently. Unfortunately, I feel
here's
bad
the thing.
For them.
Let's get off the fence about this. So when I was watching it, I heard, I saw, I did very little research, but I saw like there was AI being used to create images in the film, and I was like, we'll see what that means. So I'm watching it, and with those transition, like the be right back, cards that they use before their commercial break in the movie, like, I'm a designer, so like I know I could spot generated AI artwork, and I was like, oh, like the first few were like, it's like subtle, and then, you know, they need more. So it got more and more AI, like there's a certain aesthetic with generative
AI. It's
like AI.
Uncanny Valley,
and like it has a certain aesthetic. And the thing is, this is my position on it because like it affects my industry that I work in.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think it's fun. It's a tool. It is a tool to conceptualize your ideas in higher fidelity. Because like you can sketch it out. You can like create like a mood board. But now we have this tool to actually pretty much create something that's more akin to what I'm thinking of visually. Right. And then you pass that to an artist and then they actually do a final pass on it. They actually flesh it out and actually do the work on it. But like, that's a good step one, a good conceptual
phase. Which I think from what they've said is their designers worked with the AI. And in my opinion, if you use it as a tool, that's fine. Yeah. But
it definitely looked like they just maybe like changed like the lettering in there.
I know like vaguely what AI kind of looks like, but I wouldn't have as keen of an eye as you because like I, you know, paint and do art, but like I'm still very much non-digital because like that's just how I learned my art. So like I don't always have an eye for like the little intricacies. But I think the main thing is like a lot of artists are kind of upset that AI pulls from the entire internet. So if you upload your photo or a photo of your artwork, they're like, well, should they be paying us for that? That's a whole thing.
The AI models that do that are, I believe, Midjourney, Leonardo, I forget what else. But the only ethical AI model is one by Adobe, which is called Firefly. And everyone knows about that because on Photoshop, it's called Generative Fill. That's only because it pulls from Adobe's library. And we all know Adobe's library is super extensive. So that's the one, that's the one that we want to win. But yeah, you're right. It does pull from copyright, AI, all these other models.
Yeah. But I like having your opinion on it too.
I think like also, and your opinion is very, very valid because once again, you're an artist, so you actually know more what goes into the AI. But I think the reason so many people were upset was that AI was a big part of the writer's strike because so many writers were afraid of AI just completely taking over the script writing aspect eventually and people being out of jobs. So I think when people think of AI, they're not just thinking of it as the like as the artist in the illustrations, they're thinking about it as writing about taking on actors' imagery and, you know, and there's all these discussions to be had. So I think people view this phone as a, view this movie as a stepping stone into something deeper and more problematic if it keeps happening. So I don't really think there was any malicious intent. I think these guys, they were just experimenting and they got the short end of the stick is what I felt happened. But I think the reason people are so upset is they're afraid of bigger companies starting to use AI and what that can lead to in the future.
Yeah. Well, and that I makes think sense. Also animators get the short end of the stick anyways. In Hollywood, animators get underpaid and overworked all the time. And like in game development too, it's like, you know, the people that do the more intensive work are the ones that get paid less because their faces aren't on it, you know? And so I guess that's, I can understand. I don't know if like animators are upset about it too. Like, I don't know. I feel like design is a, you know, you've got direction, acting, music, design, and I think they're all like little pieces of the pod. So I would like to hear, like, it's nice to hear what you think, Armand, because like you do design. So like, you actually like you have experienced it.
Here's the thing with this film, because like that's valid. Like that's like machine learning, artificial intelligence. We are on the precipice of something very interesting because like you said, like this could take like, we can literally have AI actors now. Like there's Sora that just like came out. That's like,
oh, that you just Paris type in a movie? Prompt.
Yeah. Oh my creepy. God. But anyways. So here's the thing based on my eye looking at this film, they used the AI for those transition things. And in my opinion, they barely cleaned it up. It was just straight, generative artwork. A human did not touch it. And if a human did touch it, it was probably clean up text. But the actual image, the artwork, was untouched. It was just completely AI making that.
Womp womp.
Now, like we said earlier, this was a cheap film. They needed money. Yeah. Guess what? Artists are expensive. Designers are expensive.
As they should be.
So to have something that's going to be on screen for a couple seconds, they put that to AI.
It's the least harmful, I guess. Yeah. I don't really have a problem with it in this movie, but I think if I saw, like, if, which this is never going to happen, but if Studio Ghibli was like, oh, we did an entire AI movie that based from all of our other movies. I'm like, I don't want to see that. That sounds like a
maybe
nightmare.
I want to see that. You know, maybe we'll get like the unknown in there and like
Totoro and Willy Wonka. Howl's Moving Castle, and they just go to the spring and Spirited Away.
Let's get off the fence. Was the use of AI unethical in this film, Late Night with the Devil?
Oh, Brittany.
You know,
speak from the heart.
David actually said that in an interview. It's really funny that you said that. Because he said, I actually have it written down here. He's like, my opinion on that stuff is always like, if you're listening to like the deepest, quietest part of your heart and it's telling you to do something, I think you should listen to it. Because he was talking, they asked him about how, like, how do you feel that people are protesting the movie? And that's what he said. I just keep coming back to, I don't think it was malicious. I just think it was dumb. That's my personal opinion. I think it was probably something they were probably like, oh, we need something that's really 70s looking that looks like it would be used as like a card for a talk show, but we don't know where to start. You know, that's what I think personally happened. But then again, okay, obviously I don't do what you do for a living, but also how hard would it be to give someone, I don't know, just for them to figure out their $500 and be like, hey, design 3 cards for us, please. And we'll give you $500 and put your name. You have an IMDb credit. Like, I don't know, because I don't really know. Yeah, I don't really know how much artists would ask for something like that. But surely you could work like 500. You have 9 production companies on your movie, right? You can like throw $500 to an artist.
Or you could have just bought old 70s actual ones, right, and then just added the Night Owl. But I don't think they should have just done that,
to be honest.
Yeah, and it would have been more real, honestly. But I don't think it's malicious. I think it was a choice they made, and maybe it wasn't the most ethical choice, but I don't think they meant it to be. And I honestly don't think they thought anyone would notice, because they probably are not.
Oh
no, because I'm saying they probably are not as in tune to what AI, that people who work in design and in art.
It's just like the Kate Middleton family photo.
Right.
She didn't think we were going to notice all the Photoshop mistakes that she made.
Yeah. Or like when you can tell somebody has an Instagram, like a TikTok filter on their face in their like Facebook profile picture, because you've like seen them in real life. And I'm like, that is not how that person looks in real life. But
they upload their photo and it has like in the file name Facetune.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I have used them on things like TikTok where I'm like, I want to make a TikTok, but I don't want to put on a face and I don't want people to like be bullying me on the internet. So I'll put, but I mean, it tells you that you're using a filter. It's not like, I'm like, yes, this is my real face. Absolutely. You know, I'm not using a filter tonight though, y'all. This is my real face. But yeah, not malicious, but I can understand why people don't find it fully ethical from an artistic standpoint.
This is also like a greater argument too. So I don't know who made the decisions to use these AI images. Let's just say it's the directors. And like, but like,
David Dalmatian.
David did it. No,
absolutely.
Like,
David was like, we have to use AI.
Yeah, let's do it, guys. Go for it.
Just kidding. Love you, David.
But like, to me, but we have this with movies now, okay? And like, directors who have done unsavory things, which AI, I think, that's not quite as unsavory.
It's not
as
Roman Polanski or Woody Allen.
No, exactly. But it's like, should all the actors and crew members who put all their, like, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in this movie be punished because they made a stupid decision on AI?
No. That's like saying all the actors and directors should be punished because of Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because he financed all these movies.
Weirdly, like, I've watched three Tarantino movies in the past week. And I'm, but every time his name
comes up, by, like, executive producer, Harvey Weinstein.
I'm like, you know what, though?
It's okay. It's really painful.
It's not okay, but
because
he's in jail at least.
Harvey Weinstein, along with God and Moms, is like the most thanked person in Oscar history. So, God, People's Mothers, and Harvey Weinstein are the three most thanked people during Oscar speeches. You want to be a star,
Toots?
Oh, yes. I will never forget the audio of that, of him trying to, like,
get that woman. I didn't even know that existed. I don't even know.
Oh, it's really gross. He's just like, please. He's just basically is trying to beg her to have sex with him. And she's like, no, I really want to go. And he's like, please, please. She's like, you're in a bathrobe. I need to go.
I just shuddered a little bit.
Like, speaking of shudder. So I don't think it's Shudder's fault.
No.
Used AI. No, I think the situation that I presented is probably what happened. Like, hey, we need art for this moment. Yeah. And we don't have a lot of money. Oh, there's this nice tool that we can use that could produce some pretty good artwork. Let's just use that. Oh, why is everyone mad? Where'd I lose you?
I don't think they understood the breadth of the situation. Yeah. Also, no offense, but if they do all their editing in Australia, I'm sure they know about the writer's strike and the actor's strikes, but I don't know if they I don't know how. If they're even in SAG-AFTRA, I don't really know how it works always with
maybe they didn't know all the people. News articles from Hollywood were upside down in Australia.
Exactly. Just like the toilets. It was just flushing. It was left, right to left instead of left to right. And they just didn't have the time to look through a mirror. No, yeah. I was like, I don't know. I don't think they did it. I think they probably were unaware of the impact it would have or didn't think that anyone would care, frankly.
Right.
Which I don't think that's a great thing, but I still like the movie enough to say you should still see it.
Yes, I think it's silly to even protest this film because you're just harming all of the actors and the talent that were utilized to make this movie to begin with. Like, it's not that David Dasmalchian.
I love that. That's his name.
He didn't go into the office and be like, all right, everyone, this is my movie and we need artwork, but I don't want to pay anybody. No, he didn't do that. He just went to set, said the lines, played the character of Jack Delroy. Yeah, it's not his fault. I think it was not maliciously, that wasn't the intent at all.
Also, kind of upsets me that this movie was getting really good press. It still has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 82, I think, for audience score. So it's still getting really great reviews. But if people are going to avoid watching this because of, like, literally maybe 30 seconds of film, I would say that's not correct. I mean, do what you need to.
That's lame.
You know, I'm the one who doesn't watch Woody Allen movies. I've refused to watch a Roman Polanski or a Woody Allen movie until they're dead, you know, because they're not in jail for
People complaining about that they used AI in this film, probably password share for various streaming platforms, probably pirated movies, probably downloaded MP3s of their favorite artists, probably done all this stuff to skirt copyrights, and then they're gonna stand on their high horse and be like, oh, you know what, I should boycott this movie because it uses AI. It's like, pick and choose your battles, buddy. Well, you probably don't have clean hands.
Let me just, like, throw this out there, and I don't know if this would do more damage, but, like, what if they were like, hey guys, ahead of the Shudder release of this movie, release of it to streaming, we actually hired an artist, we asked them to do the title cards, and that's what you're going to see from now on. It's actually like, what do you think the community would do? I think they'd be mad.
They would say you went back on your word. That's like my little protest with the Woody Allen Roman Polanski thing. That's my own private rodeo, and I'm not going to like make anyone else not watch them. You know, it makes me like, it's also,
I think,
honestly,
your moral standing has a little bit more water in it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Raping children is not cool. Sorry, it's just not cool with me. Oh, I don't know why.
But then, like, if we're going to get And we're going to get on that bus. Which
no, I'll get off that bus. Sorry, no, I shouldn't have brought it up.
I'm in total agreement with Roman Polanski.
No, I know.
But then you think about all the major Hollywood stars that signed for him.
You're in agreement with Roman Polanski?
No, I'm in agreement with her about Roman
Polanski. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is a shitbag.
Wow,
yeah,
but everyone signed but, okay, up, including but, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, but like you think of all the Hollywood stars, a lot of them that actually liked that signed the letter for him to be like, hey, let him come back. And you're just like, should we like protest all their movies too? Because they're in agreement with this piece of shit guy who did this.
It's hard.
You know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, you know, that is where like that's like Gus in this film. My moral compass is like, I'm not going to watch those movies until they've passed away and they're not getting money from watching these movies, which we only have a few more years for both of them, let's face it. So not that long. You know, I saw Rosemary's Baby before I knew about the Roman Polanski stuff, and, you know, great movie. But Woody Allen movies, honestly, I saw a couple of them before I knew about his stuff, and they're very similar, so I don't feel like I'm missing out either. So I feel like if Quentin Tarantino...
I'm in New York. Yeah.
I'm not saying they're bad films, but he has the same characters over and over again in different situations.
Yeah.
And I'm not a bad filmmaker, obviously.
I don't see the big deal. That's just me.
What? You know, it is what it is.
Annie.
Oh, yeah. What was that? Yeah. I was watching some show where someone was just like, what was her name? What was that Diane Keaton's character in Annie Hall? And they just could not remember her name. And I was like, it's Annie. But anyways, to me, that's where I draw the line. And I'm not going to tell someone else they can't watch Rosemary's Baby, because it is objectively one of the best horror movies of the 70s, also dealing with Satanists like this movie. So, you know, I get it, but that's where my moral compass is. But I'm not going to force that on somebody else. And do your own research, because I'm a documentary fan and I've watched so many about them that's why I made my decision. But yeah,
if
Quentin Tarantino came out as a bad person, I would be very upset, because I do like his movies a lot.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, how much he loves feet.
Well, we do know about the feet, but
he denies it.
I will say
bullshit.
So Uma a couple of years ago. So it turns out I didn't know this. One of the main reasons Volume 3 of Kill Bill never went into production.
She
was harmed on the set of Volume 2. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to drive the car.
Nope.
He kind of forced her to drive the car, and she wrecked
a stunt coordinator on the set. Or the stunt coordinator was there, but her stunt person wasn't there. And he convinced her to do it. And I think him and Harvey and then Harvey had also done some shit to her. But they became friends again because he
released the footage.
So she could bring it down against Harvey Weinstein. Because, like, not only is he a sexual predator, but he also provides a dangerous work environment for people. Because look how injured I got.
Yeah, and that's what she pretty much said about Quentin. She was like, she's like, it could have been very detrimental to him, and he still gave me the video without question. So I was like, I don't know if he's a perfect man, but I don't think he's a.
But he does
I don't
love
think he's a
perfect
bad
feet.
Man. He does love feet. He does love feet.
Once you know it is unmistakable, it's like there's so many feet pics. I've watched Kill Bill 1, 2, and Pulp Fiction the last week. So much feet.
It made me happy.
Sorry, we got off.
This is a really weird thing, and we'll get back to
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Well, it's so
there
stupid,
are bare feet in that.
But not only bare feet, but what's her name? Selma Hayek.
Hayek.
She puts her foot in Quentin Tarantino's mouth.
She does.
It's
Selma Hayek. I would let Selma Hayek not in my mouth, but I mean, if she put her foot on my shoulder, I'd be like, you know what?
But he's not. He does not discriminate against feet, because I remember watching Kill Bill as a kid and I was like, those are size 10 feet. Like, I just knew because I have size 10 feet.
And maybe he likes size 10 feet. I don't know.
He doesn't discriminate. So at least he hasn't discriminated against big and long feet. Like, that was my thing. I was like, well,
he likes them. He also will hit people with giant dildos when they fall asleep on set. Like, that's a whole thing. I just think he's a bit of a weird man.
Yeah, I think he's just weird.
I don't think he's a harmful
weirdo.
Well,
he used to work, I think at Family Video or Blockbuster.
So,
he's a video guy, he's weird.
Yeah.
He's one of those weird guys.
I just,
Brittany also, Brittany, didn't you work at a video store?
I did. My first job.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about then.
Yeah. Well, so like that's the thing. So I worked at a movie gallery.
Comic book guy, but with videos.
Yeah.
I worked at a movie gallery, and like that's how you can tell I'm aging myself, because I always say if I had
all like what?
I always say if I had an autobiography, it'd be called The Last of the Video Clerks, because I started working at a movie gallery, and then they all started closing. So my title was video clerk, and that's what I did. I helped people like find movies and stuff. And I actually got in trouble for saying new releases, like, because someone came to me and they had The Ruins and Shudder. And they're like, which one of these is better? And I was like, oh, they both suck. And the American remake. And my manager is like, we do not tell the customers that the new releases suck. So, but I was like, they did. They both suck. I was like a 17-year-old. But yeah. So
I would have appreciated that.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
There's something worse than getting home with your VHS and it hasn't been rewound and you have to use your VHS rewinder.
Which one, Point
Break
or Bad Boys 2? Which one do you prefer? No, which one are you going to watch first?
That's from Hot Fuzz, if you don't know Hot Fuzz.
Here's my next question.
Okay.
Because we were talking about, you know, he makes a deal with the devil. Yep. So here's the thing with, I'm going to Bohemian Grove lore dump on you right now.
Hell yeah.
Because probably everyone listening probably doesn't know much about Bohemian Grove. It's kind of like in
don't
the popular
culture. Don't watch the Alex
now.
Jones thing, apparently.
So this movie goes full Alex Jones, Bohemian Grove, where it's like they're worshiping the owl god, and he makes a deal with the devil, and he becomes famous.
Which it is a real physical place.
Yes.
It's a private club.
Here's the thing. I want to talk about that. So it's a real place, Northern California, Bohemian Grove, and celebrities, politicians, super famous people all go there, and it's kind of like summer camp for the politicians and really rich people. That's what it is. And the thing is, and like all the images that they used in the film are not AI. They're real historic photos. You can like, I think in the middle film, they showed like Ronald Reagan and what's his name? Nixon. They were there. Those are real photos. And like, it's kind of like it's a shroud of secrecy. And the Alex Jones broke in the 90s, I think, and like videotaped it. And it's funny.
So maybe the documentary is a little less crazy than he is now, because at some point he wasn't as crazy, and then he figured out crazy gets me views, so I'm gonna go full crazy.
Exactly. Back then he was crazy, but not crazy. So like, it's what's funny with that documentary is like you can hear him like he thinks he like opened up like Pandora's box, and he's like, oh my god, they're sacrificing a child right now.
They're turning the freaking frogs gay.
He thinks he's seen Eyes Wide Shut before his eyes.
Oh, okay.
Because like they do this cremation, this mock child sacrifice for the owl god, this giant owl statue that's in the movie too. That's why I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh my god, they're actually doing it. In my opinion, I think Bohemian Grove is just, like I said, a summer camp for rich people or politicians, because like one of the mottos was weaving spiders come not weave, which means don't talk about business here. Don't try to make deals here. Like, this is just a place to unwind and not worry about the world's problems, your company's problems. It's just a place to run around, be with nature, run around naked. That's what I think it is. I think it's just like, it's kind of like full blown like conspiracy. Like, they must be making deals. No, it's one of the tenets to not talk about business.
It's like if you've ever been like in Greek life.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like, once you like go to the chapter room and do whatever your ritual is, you kind of figure out that it's, in a lot of cases, not anything scary or special or creepy at all. But until you like are in it, you're like, ooh, what do? Do they drink blood? Do they? Right. We used to have a joke because squirrels were our mascot for some. It's appropriate on the Montevallo campus because it is overtaken by feral cats and squirrels. So cool. But like, I don't understand at other campuses how they get away with having a squirrel as a mascot. But we used to tell, like, we used to jokingly tell people that we drink squirrel blood and dance naked around a circle. You know, I'm not allowed to break chapter room secrecy, so I can't tell you if that's true or not. But it is fun to tell people that and see their eyes widen at a frat party, you know. But the thing is, early Girl Scouts or anything where, like, the Masons are probably not actually controlling the government. But I will say, when a bunch of powerful people are in the same club, they probably do favors for each other because they know each other. So I think it's less like you're saying, it's more like they don't really do the deals there. But yeah, they might do the deals outside because they recognize each other and they had a good experience together. Right. Like, I trust that dude. Right. You know, that's the whole thing where people graduate and they're like, my sorority sister, my fraternity brother got networking. Me this job. It's the networking thing. Mm-hmm. I did it because there was no social life on our campus if you weren't a theater major or Greek. There wasn't much of a social life, so party, I was like, okay. Yeah. But I'm very much not I don't know if I'm the person you would... I don't know. I always thought my sorority was very, like, non-sorority sorority. We were very chill. So I had a pretty chill experience.
Yeah, see, there's a mystique to, like, a secret society or a secret club or even an exclusive club. So when the mystique is so high that, you know, only men of this certain...
Like the golf course.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a golf course. It's a golf course Augusta. With extra steps. And that's my mentality with Bohemian Grove. Like, there are the conspiracies around it. Like, oh, maybe they are doing nefarious things. And the movie
that'd be more exciting.
It would be more exciting. But the truth is usually much lamer than the reality.
You seen the Church of Satan documentary that was on Hulu for a while, where it's like you actually see the Church of Satan rituals and they're very like not scary and it's just people and like all their rules are like, be cool to people, man. I'm just like, all right, well, they don't really scare me. So I tried to explain it to my mom, who's very Catholic, and she was very much like, but they're not, they're just atheists who like the vibe. I promise, mom, Brittany, what are your thoughts on Bohemian Grove? Yeah. Do you think it's a cult?
You know what? In the movie, in real life, I'm actually not that educated on it. So I actually never heard of Bohemian Grove until I was doing research. So yeah, it's a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah.
They definitely make it that way in the film. Yeah. I'm very curious. So in real life, guys, educate me on this. In real life, is it just a men's club or is it okay?
It's a men's only club. Like,
oh, I thought Hillary Clinton went there, but that might have been
If she went there, she's not allowed to go into it. Like, Bill is like, oh, listen, Hillary, you have to stay outside. Because it's a men's only thing.
I just
to the point where they hire, I shit you not, they hire male strippers and male escorts for the people that go there.
Oh, okay.
So I wonder if it's more of a club where you can be yourself if you can't be yourself out in public.
Exactly. Now you're getting it.
That's so sad.
It's a place to be free.
It's okay to be gay, y'all. It's fine.
Yeah, I think they do kind of like homoerotic stuff in there. Because thing is, like, they get plastered drunk. They pee on trees. They run around naked. And it's all dudes.
It's fun to pee on trees, honestly.
And you said
I camped a lot. I was a Girl Scout. Sometimes you have to pee on a tree.
You said doing homoerotic things. I'm like, they're reading like Interview with the Vampire to each other. Like,
no, they're doing Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, they're doing Interview with the Vampire.
They are
tonight.
They are Brad Pitt, Matt
and
Damon.
I'm Louie.
Oh, and then tomorrow, that's really cute. That's really cute, actually. No, it does. It makes me sad, like when people are so uncomfortable with themselves that they can't just be like, "Hi, I'm a little gay. It's fine. No one's gonna be mad at you." But I mean, I guess back then in the world, it was like that. I mean, personally, I wouldn't be mad at people, but I know there are assholes in this world. But it is kind of sad that you had to create a whole like owl cult just so you could like be yourself.
The god Moloch Because, like, when Alex Jones broke in, he did it with a BBC. It was John Ronson. I don't know which BBC he worked for. It was, like, either 3 or 4, BBC 4.
They're all part of the One World agenda, right? No, I'm just kidding.
And
I'm just kidding.
What the fuck? Oh, yeah, because John was just like, this is, you know, a story. And then Alex was like, oh, man. He thought he was going to become Wicker Man. He thought John Ronson, the reporter, was going to, like, double cross him at the gate. Because, like, they're walking through the gates of Bohemian Grove. And they kind of knew that, oh, we're going to have, like, newcomers in. And they're going through the gate. Oh. Alex freaks the fuck out.
Of course he does.
He bolts into the woods.
To do homoerotic stuff. He knew the vibe.
Started
right?
recording from, like, way into the distance from a tree. Like I said, he thought he stumbled upon Eyes Wide Shut. And they're like, realize like, oh, is this guy crashing the party? Alex freaks out, jumps into a river. Starts like doing like commando stuff to get out. He was living out his own action film.
I mean, honestly, I'm impressed that he could jump into a river with his physique, honestly.
He was skinnier back then.
But oh, okay, yeah. I have seen one old video of him where he didn't.
He was actually kind of good looking and puffin now. I mean, good looking back then. Why? Now he looks like a troll.
Yeah, he wasn't. Let's just say, I think the acting crazy on screen for attention, I think it like seriously, it's like when people are evil inside and they start looking worse because Palpatine. It's just like the hatred. Yeah, exactly. He is Palpatine in
do
the flesh.
What must be done.
Not really. He doesn't have that much power.
As someone
I owe
$1 billion. As someone who's never heard about this before tonight, I'm like, why hasn't this made it into like a mockumentary yet? Because it sounds like a great like mockumentary or like
I think because they don't want to get sued.
Okay.
I think because they don't want to get sued by the people that actually go there. But I'm sure they could do like something that it wasn't Bohemian Grove.
Yeah,
like, they worship like a fox.
Exactly. Like, or like,
I have a feeling there has been movies made. I just don't know them off the top of my head.
Eyes Wide Shut. Mm.
Well, Eyes Wide Shut is also based on like a novel from the 1800s, right? Like loosely. I think it was based off like a European novel from the 1800s.
Honestly, that movie was built up so much for me of like the scandalousness, and I was like, okay, so everyone's just naked. All right. Tight. And in masks.
Tight.
And Lily Sobieski is just like randomly there and someone's trying to proposition her as a teenager. That part scared me more than that. Child trafficking. Bad news.
Yeah.
Well, on that note.
Bohemian Grove, let's all go. We'll make a road trip.
Yeah, let's break into it.
But we would get turned away at the entrance,
I wouldn't.
Katie. Yeah, our
we'll go in the
like
woods.
No, wait, hold on. It's modern day, so you can present as male and say you're trans men.
But do you think a place like Bohemian Grove is actually going to be like woke enough to?
Oh, absolutely. Because like, let me lore dump you even more.
So
when
woke.
When they originally created Bohemian Grove, you saw like Nixon and Reagan, Republicans. Yeah. It was kind of like a Republican retreat.
Thing.
It turned more and more left. So it is woke.
Okay. Oh.
So why aren't women allowed now?
All habits die hard. I don't know.
Oh my God. Well, I watched the Masters this weekend for the first time ever, and I just had a very long... I was like, well, so women can't play in the Masters? And there's like no official rule, but there's no official not
aren't
rule.
There women?
And it's all very shrouded. Like, they didn't let women in that club until like... 2012 or something, or 2014, something crazy like that. I was like, okay, well, that's gross. But I want to go to Bohemian Grove.
We're gonna go.
Not,
field trip.
We're gonna go. Road trip.
Road trip.
All right. Final question. Would you recommend this film to a friend?
Brittany, you would go first?
I mean, I would. I liked it. Okay, so here's my thing. I think it was a good movie, not a great movie, but I still enjoyed the ride enough that I would recommend it to someone else, and I would watch it again, like, because I would want to try to catch what I missed, like, especially with, like, Madeline Scopes and stuff. Like I said, my only thing is that I think that the bones were really there for this to be, like, a top-tier movie, and I think this was one of those films that got talked up so much to me that when I finally saw it, I still liked it. It wasn't, it just wasn't the Billboard big movie that I imagined in my head.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
I feel like it's, especially like, I guess because I went into it, I saw the trailer and then I just shut down any kind of like anything because I was just like, I just want to go see this movie and have fun. And I didn't want to ruin it for myself. So I think I went in with the expectation that it was going to be a fun, almost comedic movie because of who was in it. And like, you know, kind of like a satire, like a, almost like an exploitation kind of film vibe or a grindhouse kind of vibe. And I guess because I would recommend it because I had a lot of fun watching it. I will say, like, I don't know, the ending might make you, because I had more than one person give the same thing, like, once that happened, they didn't love it. But I but maybe I'm just a sick, twisted person who thinks it's fun when people's heads split apart and they get eviscerated and shit. I don't know. But also, if you really like foreshadowing, a lot of foreshadowing in this movie. It's one of my favorite techniques of writing and filmmaking. So I don't know. It was fun. I think it's fun. And I really liked the vibe. So if you like 70s things and conspiracy theories and shit like that, you should definitely watch it.
It's fun. Like a movie made for me. That checks all my boxes. Because like my guilty pleasure are those trashy 70s, you know, slasher films or the 80s exploitation films. Here's the thing. I do agree with you that it's not a great movie. It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. I was entertained. Yeah. I thought it was fun. Yeah. And, you know,
I would say it's like Reanimator vibes.
Yes, it's not meant to be like, you know, like a blockbuster film or even like a classic film. This is going to be a cult classic one day. This is almost like an instant cult classic.
Yes, and Brittany. And so I will say, I know it's like I still got like the childlike wonderment of like raising my hand for things. But I didn't get anything spoiled about this movie. But, you know, even like Stephen King, when Stephen King saw this movie, he lauded it. Right.
That's the seal of approval when Stephen King likes it.
Right.
Well, yeah. It is Stephen King. And we've seen when Stephen King directs Stephen King. It is nothing but camp.
Okay.
But I love it. Don't get me wrong. But it is very campy. And you know,
I love Stephen King. We say over and over again, too, film is subjective, but a lot of people were like, okay, this is one of the most original horror movies ever made. I'm like, okay, it's original. It's very original. I will give it that. And they're like, it's going to be for this year. Was Talk to Me was last year. I'm like, no, this isn't Talk to Me. I'm sorry. Like, and you guys may disagree with that, but I really enjoyed this movie.
You agree?
Okay, thank you.
Like, the thing is, a lot of people from my camp, too, saw the ending and was like, did they really have to go that over the top with it? It kind of took me out. Honestly, that's the point of the fucking movie, is it not?
It's fun.
You had the setups.
It's a movie. Then,
I mean, they could have went even more outlandish. They could have like the sky open up and all these like hellhounds come out. Well, no, it was just, listen, the setup was this girl had like a demon inside her. And then we saw the demon at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, I got what I paid my money for. I had a good time.
To quote Tarantino, because it's fun, June, or whatever that interviewer's name was, because I like it.
Right, why are your films so so gory and so violent?
Because it's fun. And I like feet. He didn't say that part, but
we
don't know. Quentin, it's okay. It's okay to like feet, and everyone at Bohemian Grove, it's okay to be a little gay. Well, I guess they're okay now. So that's a positive world change, so... Round of applause for Bohemian Grove.
Speaking of, okay, I do have to dip into this. Okay, did you guys, real quick. So when Madeline's talking on the air about when her, when they meet for the first time, she's like, you know, she's like, you should see the way he was embarrassed with all those beautiful bodies. I'm like, oh, Jack's like bisexual. Like that was like my first indication. Like I was like, so it makes sense what you're telling me about the Grove too, right? Like
they did the research.
Yeah.
Maybe they're members.
I mean, because I really did. Because, like, once again, like, with the dialogue, it's like, I thought there was going to be something that went further with that, too. Because he was so embarrassed about the way she was, like, commenting about him, like, just being in all these different bodies backstage, right? I don't know. So.
I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe David Dalmatian did go to the Bohemian Grove. I don't know.
Maybe. Oh, I was talking more with the directors. But I don't think so. I think he does like spooky things. I would, if you want to hear about him and like his background, he's a very interesting person. Last Podcast on the Left did an interview with him recently, and he is pretty cool. And he also talks about his work on The Dark Knight, how that was his first film ever. And his first filming experience was with Heath Ledger. And Heath Ledger was apparently like, didn't have to stay in character, was just like the nicest dude. And he would just have a normal conversation with you in full Joker makeup and then snapped his fingers and would just go be the Joker on camera. And he was like, that's the best kind of actor to work with. And I was like, thank you. What a guy. Because that is true. Method people are, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. But yeah, he's a, that is some supplementary research that was really fun to listen to.
Yeah.
And yeah. Or you can watch Twin Peaks The Return and see him, but that's like a, you know, 30-hour movie, basically. So.
One day.
Dip into that.
One day. All right. So we talked at length about this film, and honestly, it is, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie. I think everyone should check it out if they like this type of stuff. It's like,
Watch
on Shutter. Video nasty. Oh, yeah. You know, something that would be on Elvira or Svengoolie late at night.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a great time.
I will say, real quick, so I never heard of this before I read this interview with the Hollywood Reporter and the directors, but they asked if they were inspired by Ghostwatch. And they were like,
which is on Shudder right now. I just started watching it.
We gotta watch Ghostwatch. So yeah.
I've been waiting for it to come on streaming, so maybe this year.
Yeah.
Maybe this year we watch Ghostwatch for Halloween.
Did you hear anything about Ghostwatch, Armand?
Nope. What's that?
Okay. So basically it was like a broadcast and it was made to look like the show was getting overtaken by ghosts. And
yeah, really it was like the War of the Worlds of London, of Britain in the 90s. Because Craig Charles from Red Dwarf is it himself on the scene.
Hold
which up. I thought was hilarious.
Okay, hold up. Holy moly. So I'm just looking at this right now, really quick.
Yeah.
They broadcast this on BBC One, their flagship station.
With real news people.
And they played it straight.
Yes.
And people freaked out because they thought it was actually haunted.
Yeah, because they had people calling in. They had fake calling in people. And so people were thinking that real people were calling in and shit.
This is amazing.
So also, it's fucking great. But and then they had all the hosts were real news people from the BBC. And then they have Craig Charles there, who everyone knows from Red Dwarf. So they're like, oh, these are all like legit people. But then they had actors be the family members and like the paranormal experts and shit. It's great.
Oh, my God.
They play it completely straight.
I have to watch
it. And it's on Shudder.
This.
I think it's Shudder right now. It just came on streaming in the U.S. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I wrote it in my notes and forgot to talk about it because we got on Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great.
Oh, my God. So this was Late Night with the Devil before Late Night with the Devil.
Yes.
It said played on actual TV and fooled people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing.
It's about time, really. America needs this again.
I don't know if it would work today.
I don't know because of the internet. I think because the internet was so hard to get a hold of back then.
It was 1992.
Late. Yeah. This was before Jurassic Park because I was 93, right? So I've just decided to put everything before Jurassic Park or after because it was the first big movie I remember as a kid. But yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's incredible.
Yeah. I started watching it today, actually, because I was like, ooh. And then I got distracted and had to walk away from it. But it's honestly very interesting. So
I'll have to check that out. That is, oh my God, this sounds like the best thing ever. And I also want to mention honorable mention because like, Brittany, you're saying like you wanted like actor interviews in between the actual instead of like behind the scenes.
IFC thing.
Yeah, like eyewitness interviews and stuff.
Because like, you seen Dark Place?
Mm-mm.
Ooh, oh my God. Yeah, it's called Dark Place. It's complete parody, satire of like a Stephen King character. And he's like full of himself, like, oh, welcome to my dark place. And like he created this like TV show, fake TV show. And the actors are terrible. And they have like intersplice like actors playing themselves, like, you know, when I was doing this scene, I channeled something beyond me. I was speaking the truth. And then it hard cuts to like the TV show. And it's like horrible acting. You too.
Or like American Horror Story Roanoke.
Where
Yeah.
I have some.
There's good ones out there. I love those kinds of movies where it's like presenting itself as both real and fictional all at once. It's really fun.
So you wanted that. But it wasn't that. I think your calling is to make something like that.
Or either something like that or something where it was just like we don't look away, like it's the full like 90 minutes we're on the show.
Like Ghost. Like in that way
Well, I guess we'll just have to film some fake commercials and send them to him and be like, would you put this in between your...
No, because it's not AI. We can't use it.
Oh, we can't use it. Oh, can't use it. No, no.
I'll pretend to be Sophia the robot. I'll put on a bald cap.
Brittany, Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
We did not mean to do that together. That was very shining twins of us. Thank you so much.
Every single time.
Like...
We also say bye at the same time at the end of our podcast now. I don't know how that started, but I love it. So
yeah, bye. So
well, just like Ghostwatch, this has been real.
It has been. We got deep in the conspiracy theories.
Truly.
Yeah.
Do you two have like a podcast or something?
We might.
Where can people hear more of you two?
It might be called the Grindhouse Girls Podcast. We just celebrated our fourth anniversary because it's 2024. We started in 2020.
Congratulations.
So, little, if you like to support independent films and independent podcasts, come support our little indie podcast. And you might hear familiar voice on there soon. Who knows?
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Are you talking about yourselves?
Oh, no, I meant
you might hear a familiar voice like mine.
Mine, Brittany's, who knows? But Armand's actually been on there a few times. And I think that was the last
time. Three times?
Yeah.
I did Halloween, Cabin in the Woods.
And then we kind of...
Oh, Dawn of Day. Oh, that was yours. That was on Sunday.
Then we kind of co-did Thanksgiving, which...
Oh, Thanksgiving.
Brittany liked the most, but we all kind of were disappointed in
that
it.
That was awful.
The oven death was kind of fun, but that was about
it. Oh, my God. I almost threw up.
Yeah. That was the goal.
That was the goal.
All I could think of is, like, me being OCD and doing my checks. And, like, I'm like, oven off.
Because you want to roast that bird.
That is, like, one of my biggest fears. So I'm just like, it's like, I'm not going to crawl into the oven anytime soon. Yeah. But just in case, let me make sure my oven's off.
As long as it's not the visit. But yes, if you want to listen to us, Grindhouse Girls Pod is usually most of our handles on our socials. We're not very big on Facebook, but we're pretty hip on Instagram. Yeah. I haven't been on Facebook in like months.
It's for boomers.
So, boomers.
Yeah.
I found out I got invited to some people's birthday parties after the fact and I'd missed them. And I felt like a real shit. I was like, oh no, I guess I should get on every like week or so and just check my traps.
Girls, thank you so much. This has been real.
Thank you.
So,
absolutely.
Everyone, listen to Grindhouse Girl Pod. And until next time, stop that scroll and spend more time watching. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
That's it for this time on The Syndicate. We hope you enjoyed yourself. Keep the conversation going by adding us on Instagram and Letterboxd, where you can catch Armand along other podcasters and listeners at Syndicate. And until next time, stop that scroll and spend more time watching. Goodbye.